This is the TSN MMA show with Aaron Bronstetter and Bazooka Joe Valtellini.
After a major lull, UFC 224 is upon us. If Nate Diaz comes back, who should he face? Is Amanda Nunes the best female mixed martial artist ever? We'll discuss that. Has the UFC made us get accustomed to weekly cards? And we are joined by Kelvin Gastelum and Mackenzie Dern, who will be on this weekend's pay-per-view card. We are back for another episode of the TSN MMA show. Joe back in the building, which is great. How's it going, Joe?
Yeah, things ups and downs in that last week. I was a little upset I missed. But yeah, loss of a family member kind of kept me away. But yeah, now I'm off to glory as well. So I'm all over the place. Yeah. I think this week is going to be a good week for me to kind of slow down everything.
And it was your birthday also.
It was my birthday, yeah. So it was weird. You know, having a funeral on my birthday was one of the, it was a weird experience, you know, happy and sad at the same time. But I think what I got out of it was we've got to be happy and celebrate life regardless. So I'm excited to be back with glory and off to Lille, France. We got some big fights. We have Tong Chai versus Doumbé on the UFC Fight Pass. And on ESPN, we have Sitichai, the defending lightweight champ, against the young up-and-comer Tijani Bastati. So, big weekend for me.
That's a fun name to say.
Tijani Bastati?
Yeah.
It is nice.
Where's he from?
It is nice. He's Dutch-Moroccan. He's from Holland.
Though.
Yeah,
cool.
It's a nice name. Young, 21. He was our youngest prospect we've ever signed. And just jumped the ranks quick.
He's in the main event.
Yeah.
Wow, good for him.
It's really cool to see these young guys do really well. But when you face someone like Sitichai and those Muay Thai fanatics listening, man, he's just so hard to beat. Very simple but effective southpaw that just beats everybody. You got to really go in there and you really got to fight him and be aggressive, use your counter shots. But it's a hard task, especially for a young kid. So, yeah, good on him.
You got to start getting glory on Canadian TV. Does Fight Pass have the main card in Canada? Do they have the rights to that or no?
The Fight Network does.
Oh, they're still airing it? Fight Network's still airing it?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, they've been airing it.
I'll have to record that then. That's
that'll
be fun to watch. Glory's always a lot of fun. I always like hearing Joe Rogan talk about how he likes kickboxing more than like anything else.
Yeah.
Because it is more exciting. I think kickboxing is like, it's for me, I find it hard to follow for some reason. I've got to follow everybody.
Yeah.
But especially with that, when I'm on top of the UFC all the time and there's one pretty much every week. I mean, that's kind of what I wanted to talk about a little bit with the UFC is like, are we kind of getting accustomed to every Saturday night as fight night?
I think so. I was one of the first ones complaining about it, being like, oh, there's too many cards. No one could watch them. But this last few weeks, I'm like, I wanted something to
me
watch.
Me too. I'm bored.
Yeah.
I'm bored. I want to see
I'm so used to it. It's become routine. Yeah. And that out of that routine, it was hard.
And it's not like there was a lack of combat sports. Like we had, there was that Bellator card with Fedor.
Yeah. Triple G boxing.
Yeah, Triple G, 1FC. You know, and now even this weekend, you've got the Lomachenko fight,
yeah,
as well as Glory.
Yeah, Ryzen was on the weekend.
Yeah, and Ryzen was on the weekend. So it's not like there was a shortage, but for some reason, the UFC is just, it gives me a different feeling. Like, I feel like it's extremely important for some reason.
Yeah, you might be a little biased. Who knows?
I probably am, but I'm just talking about from my own, as a viewer, I find that, like, the UFC, for some reason, carries more weight with me.
Yeah, I think it all does. Like, even with me, like, even that Bellator with Fedor, and it was good and exciting to watch. But
yeah, but up until that main event, it felt like everybody was, like, these were just feeder fights. Like, there were three really big favorites that were all good at jiu-jitsu, and they were going to get submissions.
Well, it's brand building your athletes, right? They had a lot of jiu-jitsu guys that they really wanted to build up, so that's their way to do it.
Yeah.
And I think it's not a bad strategy either. I mean, people are talking about this Bellator with all these submissions, so
Dylan Danis is making waves.
Yeah, so it's building up the right people. And I think a lot of combat sports should use that principle sometimes. Sometimes we throw these up-and-comers right to the wolves right away.
You just mentioned,
and they don't
build
themselves.
Glory's doing it this weekend.
Yeah, basically, yeah.
But they also probably want to see what this kid's got.
But that's been a big issue in my eyes with kickboxing. It's we don't have the amount of athletes at the highest level that someone like the UFC has. So we're forced as these young up-and-coming athletes to fight these big names. I had to do it. My debut, I fought someone with 80 professional fights in Turkey. But, you know, an opportunity to fight for glory doesn't always come around, so you got to jump on these big opportunities. But I was lucky enough to get out there and build a name for myself because I consider myself a special martial artist. But a lot of these kids don't have that ability. You go in and you go and get knocked out, which happens 99% of the time. You know, that kid's going to have a hard time coming back, climbing his ranks, but you can't give up the opportunity. So you're kind of thrown in this predicament.
And now it's safe to say, I guess, that glory fighters coming over to the UFC is becoming a trend. I mean, we have Gokhan Saki was calling out Bisping recently.
Yeah,
he's fighting at 226.
Waves, which is good.
Adesanya, main event of the Ultimate Fighter finale. And now you told me before the show, I didn't even realize Alex Pereira signing on to fight in the Contender Series.
Yeah, and that's really exciting. Pereira's the current, this is the thing, he's the current middleweight champion. So I think this is our first for, you know, glory kickboxing. You know, we had Adesanya come in, who was a title contender, who fought for the title but never had it.
And got knocked out by?
He got knocked out by, what are you talking about, the Adesanya?
Yeah.
Yeah, Alex Pereira,
Alex
right?
Alex Pereira.
It wasn't in glory, but it was in another organization.
Okay.
Yeah, good call. I didn't even think about that. Yeah, that's how, you know, Pereira actually ended up getting his shot against Simon Marcus, which got him the title. So, I mean, yeah, it's good to see a current champion do it.
Yeah, we'll see what he's got.
Yeah.
But at the same time, if you're in Contender Series, that's a scary guy to face.
Yeah, but it's scary for kickboxing, too. If something happens to him and then he can't defend his
head. Yeah, so he gets, like, stopped, like a leg lock.
Yeah, and all of a sudden, I don't want to hear it, knock on wood. You can hear me knocking. But, yeah, I think he'll be fun to watch. He's got that good boxing style, good knees. His knees are vicious. I think he's going to make some noise. Hopefully they give him, like, again, that right matchup. He's Brazilian. He does do jiu-jitsu, but a good, smart, striking matchup would be the way to go.
Yeah, that'll be his fourth fight. You know what? The Contender Series has a lot going for it this time around. You've got Pereira. You've got Nick Newell. You've got Greg Hardy, which I don't really agree with him getting a shot, but at the same time, it'll still be something to watch.
Yeah.
And just a lot of other guys that, like Alex Arosa, who was, not Alex Arosa, Julian Arosa, who was in The Ultimate Fighter, who was a fun guy in The Ultimate Fighter. He's getting another crack at it because he's done well on the regional scene.
Yeah.
So it's cool to see names come back and also names that of guys that are doing really well on the regional scene. Like I think the Contender Series has a lot of upside for bringing
and
in good fighters.
Let's talk about the car. Carl Roberson, right?
Yeah, Roberson's on it too, right?
Another I say Roberson, guy. Roberson, But yeah, he's on it too. So he was the first one to get signed from the Contender Series.
Yeah.
So, I mean,
phenomenal.
That's huge for us as well. I'm actually liking this way. If I'm a coach and, for example, my fighter Tariq Ismail, who fights TKO, but if our path is obviously to the UFC, but what is the best path now for these guys? Because it's very tricky. And if you look at history, Bellator is never really the way to go. Usually, sometimes if you pick the Bellator way, it's hard to go jump over to the UFC.
The
it's only been a handful.
In. They get locked into contracts.
There's only been a handful of guys. I want to say Hector
only
Lombard.
Only the big guys, yeah.
Hector Lombard. Who
Will
else
Brooks,
would have been? Will
Brooks. Eddie Alvarez.
Yeah. There's maybe
and then there's
a
some
handful.
Guys like Blagoje Ivanov just signed with the UFC. He was in Bellator, World Series of Fighting. He was the champ of World Series of Fighting.
But, I mean, handful.
And Alexander Volkov he was in Bellator, got cut. Did well in the regional scene and came.
And then
came back. There are very few guys that go directly from Bellator to the UFC.
Yeah, and then all the other promotions, you think it's tough, right?
I mean, LFA guys, if you become the champion of LFA, you're pretty much guaranteed a shot in the UFC.
Yeah,
that's
what I'm hoping TKO becomes for Canada as well. It's that breeding ground for the Canadian martial
arts.
Apparently,
though, TKO doesn't have. Like, they have a pretty strict contract, though. It's not like Adam Dykstra, I think that's how you pronounce his last name, the Kung Fu Panda, he's their heavyweight champion. Like, and he was going to get a shot on Contender Series, but he's locked up by TKO. Like, I don't think TKO is letting guys go to the UFC when they're still under
that's
contract.
That's the issue with a lot of these fighters signing contracts. They need
LFA
kind of
has an
open door
policy. LFA will let you go.
If you're a good fighter and you have potential, why would you not put that in your contract?
Mm-hmm.
That's just me saying
that.
I mean, even before I got signed with Glory, a lot of regional scenes wanted to sign me to this exclusive deal. And I was like, no, I'm not signing an exclusive deal for when I see an organization like Glory being dangled in front of my face.
Mm-hmm.
No, I'm not going to lock myself down. So a lot of fighters need to have that confidence in their contract. I mean, like, it's okay. If I don't fight three times, you got to perform and do well. If you're going to perform, the local scene's going to take you on, and UFC is going to recognize you.
And companies
but
like
don't
Bellator,
lock themselves in,
yeah, Bellator and ONE FC have like basically matching clauses. So like if the UFC says, okay, we'll give you a 6-fight deal, $100,000 a fight, like Bellator can be like, no, we're going to we'll match that.
Yeah, for sure.
So guys can't go over.
And again, they're going to obviously if they're good potential, Bellator throws them a little bit more money than the UFC on their early contracts. Guys are going to go there, but I think it's too hard to get back.
But it does seem like Bellator has like guys in Bellator can fight elsewhere while they're under Bellator contract, but not in the UFC. Like, they can fight at ACB and things of that. I believe. Like, I think some guys have... I think Frank Mir says he wants to fight in ACB next.
Yeah, because Frank Mir's not going to commit. He's too smart. He's been around. He has a few fights left.
Or he has language in his contract that says, I want to fight
But he
elsewhere.
Probably has a few fights left and wants to make some good money.
You saw King Mo fight in Ryzen.
Yeah.
So it's it's interesting to see how some of these guys do get, like, I guess, caught up in these contracts.
But my original point was it used to be if you don't get signed right away, you do the Ultimate Fighter show. But I think even that now, it kind of holds you as a you know, contender fighter. So I think for me, the best option is this Contender Series as the way in, mm-hmm. rather than the Ultimate Fighter
especially
show.
If you're a kickboxer, because all the exciting wins get, like, those guys get picked up.
Yeah, they get bigged up, they get hyped right away. So I think for my eyes, it's the series that get in.
And you might be able to know, you might know the answer to this or can find out the answer to this. If Pereira does get signed to the UFC, can he fight in glory? Because I don't think he can. Like, I think he'd probably have to relinquish the belt.
Yeah, it's a very good question. I'll try to...
Yeah, shoot somebody a text. I want to find out.
Yeah, I'll try to figure it out. Yeah, I don't even know. Like, I sent it to some of my buddies because I didn't hear any word of it from Glory, but no one really replied to me, so...
Mm. What's going on? You're an employee. We should respond right away.
That's it.
Joe, sorry.
No, I didn't go to the big shots. I didn't go to the big shots. I went to the local media guys and stuff like that.
Oh, okay. And they don't respond to you?
No, I don't think they know. Who knows? Okay. No, they responded, but they were, like, not giving me any answers. Okay. But, yeah, I don't know what will happen. But, I mean, I think for anything, I'm a big believer in, you know, it's just good for the sport anyways. As Alex Pereira goes in and he fights and he makes waves, they're going to talk about him being the middleweight champion of Glory. Hey, what's this Glory thing? Hey, it's the best kickboxing promotion. So, for me, I think it's great for the sport.
But I don't think he's going to be allowed to fight outside of the UFC. Like, I don't think that the UFC is going to say, okay, yeah, you can compete in Glory as well.
Yeah.
I've never seen it before. Like, I've never seen anybody other than Conor
fight outside of the UFC. Well, Fight Pass, this was always the hope
in my eyes.
They
wouldn't let Jose Aldo box.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the hope in my eyes are if you're a top contender in the UFC, the chances of you fighting elsewhere is very slim, right? You're going to be taking care of the money, the finances, the risk. It's all better to stay with the UFC. But now, if you have a lot of guys who are never going to crack your top 10, why not let them experiment? Why don't I let them go to a Glory card? Let some of the Glory guys maybe fight another striker on the, you know, some of the lower cards. Why not use each other?
And then you also have the interesting thing that's coming up with Zuffa Boxing, and they just signed. I think it was Alex Garcia. I think I'm messing the name up.
The young kid.
Yeah. Who did they
sign?
Ryan
Garcia.
No, they signed. They signed like a really high level boxer. I don't know why his name's escaping me right now, to a Zuffa Boxing contract apparently last week. But now there's also the rumors of Cecilia Brakes fighting Cyborg in a boxing match.
Yeah, there's
she was just on HBO this weekend, and that's not normal is to have women's boxing matches on HBO. So now that you have Zuffa Boxing, maybe they'll say, well, if this Cyborg and Brakes fight can do something for us, let's do it.
Yeah, I don't think I like it. I think it only helps promote both sports. I think the problem with the boxing and the UFC is promotion. Who's going to promote? Who's going to make the money? But I think for the athletes, why not? Why not let these athletes jump in between the two? And I think that's why a lot of kickboxers seem to want to go sometimes the Glory way. If they want to itch and get their feet wet with MMA, Bellator kind of was more favorable for them because they had the option of fighting with their kickboxing league and the MMA league. So if the UFC and Glory can come together and do something,
right.
I mean, the UFC loves
athletes.
Our product.
Yeah,
the UFC loves our product. You got to think, all of Glory's pay-per-views are run by the UFC.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, they know how good our product is. They know what we can do for them. I'm hoping some of these lower-level guys or if non-title contenders should have that shot to go back and forth. I think it'll be fun. It'll be good eyes on both organizations.
Mm-hmm. The boxer I was thinking of is Mikey Garcia.
Mikey Garcia.
Alex Garcia isn't already in the UFC.
Yeah, yeah.
So Mikey Garcia.
Mikey Garcia is good, too.
Mm-hmm.
He's a top
name. And he hasn't officially been signed yet, but the reports indicate that he's close to signing a deal with Zuffa Boxing. So Boxing. And then you saw De La Hoya says he wants to get into MMA and wants to do Chuck Liddell versus Tito Ortiz 3.
Who knows now?
I don't know. It's a crazy world.
Yeah, but everyone's trying to dabble their hands, cross-promoting. I don't know. Get in there. Use some of the powers. Like, if we can get some of the boxing fans over to MMA, and I just think we're all stuck in this little world of we can only like one thing.
Mm-hmm.
I can like boxing. I can like kickboxing. I can like UFC. Why do I have to say, hey, just because I'm a Glory kickboxing guy, why is it that I can't watch UFC or support UFC or even Bellator? Like, I still support and watch Bellator, right? And I hope a lot of those fans and supporters want to come over and watch us, too. It's like... Love the sport, not the actual organization.
Yeah, you know what? It was actually refreshing to get to sit and watch Bellator as like a fan.
Something
much.
Different.
Like, I mean, I don't cover Bellator for the most part, so getting to sit and watch it on TV. It's cool, you know.
I got hearing to just Mauro enjoy again. It. Yeah, it was nice Mauro. For me. My
Mauro's got the documentary coming out. We got to get him on and talk about that. That's interesting to me.
Yeah, I didn't get to. I saw the clip. I think it comes out, what, end of May?
Yeah, something like
third
that.
Week in May.
I think towards the end of the month.
Yeah, I saw that. It looked. I was. I hope he. It's something that he opens up about because he's a big advocate for it.
Well, if you saw the clips, there was like a clip of him melting down in the trailer. So I think it's probably, knowing Mauro, I think he would want to give a pretty open door approach to his life.
Yeah, I hope so. I'm excited for it. I'm all for it, all supportive of it.
I mean, he wouldn't call himself the bipolar rock and roller if he felt there was like a stigma about having bipolar disorder.
Yeah,
or if he was embracing the stigma, so to speak, because there is a stigma about bipolar disorder.
Absolutely.
People just don't understand it.
Yeah, I don't think anyone really understands. So for him to come out and talk about it, all for it. Do your thing, Mauro.
So just going back to our original point, like the UFC makes me hungry for a UFC event every week. I feel like they've started everybody talks about kind of oversaturation, but I think they have a deep enough roster to put on good fights week in and week out. Now, we talked about how this next broadcast deal, what I would do to change it. People said, you know, less cards is always the thing. I actually keep saying more cards.
Yeah.
And when I say more cards, I mean, I think they need to distribute the talent differently.
That's my point.
Where they can have kind of cards in smaller locales, like Utica, for example, they're doing a card in June, where you don't put like top names on it, and you just have it as kind of a show that's kind of come to different cities with smaller arenas.
Yeah.
They did a show in Bangor, Maine a couple years ago.
It's almost like a WWE model.
Exactly, a little bit like that, or like the old Strikeforce Challengers model, where you just kind of have smaller cards and smaller venues, and you just do more cards. And now people are going to say, oh, that's oversaturation. But, you know, I think that those are good breeding grounds for building stars.
Yeah.
Are these kind of, you put guys in the main event like a Sean O'Malley, you put him in the main event of a smaller card, and you just keep building his profile up because it allows you to create content. And without creating content, you're not going to be able to build stars because you don't get to see them as often.
Yeah, no, I agree.
So
I think it all comes down to marketing too. But if you, by building stars, if you have a show every week, it's really hard to build a star as well, right?
It is, but it wouldn't be if you knew that the best talent was on a higher tier of card. If you knew that, like, cards, and I guess they do that with the UFC on Fox cards, but if they did a more tiered approach to cards, I think it would be very helpful to them because I think the diehards would watch kind of the whatever's available. I mean, the diehards watch whatever's available anyways.
Yeah.
But then you can say, like, okay, well, there's a UFC level 2, you wouldn't call it level 2, but like, this is a good card. It's got this guy and this guy. And then it's like, oh, you got to watch this card. It's on TV. It's got some of the best fighters. And then you really stack the pay-per-views up and you only do 6 pay-per-views a year instead
That's
of 12.
Where it is. I feel if you're paying money for these pay-per-views, you got to give us the right card.
It's weird because this pay-per-view, I think, is incredibly thin for a pay-per-view.
I agree.
But if you put this on TV,
that's
and you
a
look
great
at
fight
it,
night card.
Yeah, it's a fantastic fight night card.
I would be all for it, all supportive, saying it was one of the
you could put that on Fox, no problem.
But to pay the money for that, and what is it, the 80
Who
bucks,
are you
70,
for?
80 bucks for it now?
Who are you paying for on this card, right?
And again, if you take off, and I always have to ask you, because you're the, you know, you're the, this wizard of MMA, but if you look at it as a casual fan, you probably know 2 or 3 fights on the card. That's it. Like, if you take your, you know, your
analyst hat
off.
I was in the meeting today, and I said, this guy's fighting this guy and this guy. And the people that I know like the UFC but aren't, like, super, don't follow it much, they're like, I don't know.
I don't know anyone.
He knew who Nunes was, but, I mean, you know, like.
Yeah, but Pennington, do people know who Pennington is?
No. She hasn't fought in a year and a half.
Absolutely.
Right? So, I don't know. And, I mean, it seems like the odds have climbed and climbed and climbed for Nunes. I think it opened at around 4-1, and now it's almost at 7-1. So people don't have a whole lot of faith on Pennington. Like, I personally see a path for Pennington to win this fight. She could win this fight. I don't think she will, but she certainly can be competitive in this fight. But just looking at the card top to bottom, like, the older fans will love Belfort Machida if you've been watching this sport for a long time.
I was hoping that's a co-main event to me.
Well, I don't know. Jacare Gastelum, the winner of that fight, is probably going to get the next title shot.
Yeah, but
and that's
you
a
got
pretty high level.
Both guys, like, Belfort's got to be one or two more.
Yeah, and the other issue with this is that we're going to have the Colby Covington and Dos Anjos fight on this card, and then it got moved to Chicago.
Moved.
So that really weakened the card.
Now, is Belfort on his last few fights?
I think he has 1 or 2 on his contract. I think this might be, I can't remember, this is the last one or he has one more.
Okay, because I know he wanted this fight, talking about it being the end, his last fight or something.
He's done that many times.
That's
so
classic
knows?
Belfort?
Yeah, who knows?
But think about it, how old's Belfort now?
He's like in his probably 40 or close.
Yeah, and he came into the UFC at what, 18?
Yeah, he's been around.
Yeah,
and then he left the UFC and came back.
And then came back, man.
But Belfort's been around. I mean, Belfort, I think, if he is done with the UFC after this, he could go over to Ryzen and go back to the old kind of beefed up Belfort and see what happens
there. It's funny with Belfort, like this is a little Bazooka Joe history here, but he was probably, I've only probably had two favorite fighters in my life. And it's, I've only followed, he was the one as a kid, and the other one was Eddie Alvarez. Don't ask me why, I followed him a lot, but those are the only two guys I can say that I really followed, but Belfort was the one.
Yeah.
He was my original guy that I only watched when he fought the Ultimate Brazil, when he, with that Vanderlei Silva running punches.
He was like a buzzsaw.
Man, that's the Belfort that got me hooked for MMA. So, great career, though.
Definitely.
And
a great
staying
career
at the top, not even a career where he went down. He's still, you know,
he's still
ranked.
Fighting top
he's
guys.
He's still fighting
top
guys. So that's a successful career.
I mean, once the UFC started implementing the USADA policy, you saw that he wasn't quite the same. Like he was getting beaten badly by guys. Like I think Gastelum knocked him out, if I remember, in like a minute or something. But now, after his last win, he had a decision victory. Who did he just beat? Belfort.
I can look that up in a few seconds.
Yeah, so he, because I think he's like 1-3 in his last four.
His last win was Nate Marquardt.
Yeah, he beat Marquardt by decision, right?
Yeah.
And then before that, I think he
lost, was a no contest.
Lost three in a row, technically.
Apparently
but
it was overturned.
No,
what happened there again?
It was marijuana.
Belfort had it?
And,
Gastelum.
And Gastelum's like, I'm never fighting in Brazil again. I forgot to ask him about that, actually.
So you're at one point, you're allowed to TRT, but you still can't smoke a little weed?
Yeah.
All right. Good job, Brazil.
Who knows what's going on with that?
Are they still allowing
TRT? Apparently the Chicago card, there's a zero tolerance for marijuana. So if you have like 0.1 of like cannabinoids.
Yeah, but someone was saying too, you can basically smoke a joint up to 2 days before your fight in some places.
In some places, yeah, because there's a certain tolerance threshold.
Level of it.
But in Chicago, no dice.
But what's the Brazil's take on TRT now? Because I remember Belfort wanted to fight.
The UFC won't.
Stepped in and they don't allow it.
Well, USADA is regulating everything on top of the commission, so TRT is a no-go.
Even if it's you're within the limits?
Yeah, there's no limits anymore. You cannot use. You have to have a certain. You have to be within a certain.
This is when USADA came in?
Yeah. Okay. Because USADA does their own testing on top of.
I'm curious to see where that goes, because obviously I'm a big believer in, you know, keeping everyone's brain healthy. And a lot of the research on brain health is coming out with multiple concussions. It's affecting hormone levels in the brain, which is causing a lot of the emotional, mental disturbances, the energy problems in a lot of these athletes. So they can't compete with, you know, low levels of testosterone based on head trauma from the sport they're in. So if they can get their levels normal, I don't know.
Well,
it's making me think twice about it.
Yeah, the thing about USADA is a lot of people think it might have done more harm than good. You see guys like John Jones is on the shelf for a long time, and guys are getting busted, and a lot of the guys aren't the same as they used to be before USADA. But I actually think it's a good thing. Like, I think I like watching the sport knowing that there's a level playing field, knowing that these guys are going to, that they're being tested the same way, that there's stringent testing, that there's random testing.
I agree with that. But, I mean, what my point was is the TRT puts you just in a normal level. It won't. If the level is 15
if you're,
to 30.
If you're in a normal level and you take TRT, like if you have very low testosterone.
And you're still within the same level.
I think you're okay. Because I don't think testosterone can be. I don't think that there's anything that in TRT that gets flagged. But I'm not sure about that. Yeah. I can't be. You'd have to talk to one of the drug experts about that.
That's
Hit up Dim Space on Twitter and he'll tell you.
Yeah?
He's all over USADA.
All right.
Or Eric McCragan, he knows also. Nice, good lawyer, nice Canadian boy. He's a lawyer, follows the sport very closely and knows a lot about that, the legislative side. Rumors have been swirling about a Nate Diaz comeback. And a colleague of mine, Mike Russell, who's a Canadian journalist, says that he's been hearing rumblings that they could be doing GSP versus Nate Diaz. Now, that's a fight that I really have very little interest in seeing, but I'd watch. I mean, I'd be interested. It's good to see GSP come back.
We're definitely watching.
Yeah, it would be good to see GSP come back, but I just think GSP would run through Nate Diaz.
I agree. I don't know if that's the fight, man. Like, I just think...
Yeah, through GSP, like, GSP's talked about legacy. He wants things to improve his legacy.
Yes, that's why I'm saying, is it really going to do anything?
He'd make money.
Maybe in the past, yeah, but now I don't see the heat behind the name in the fight for GSP to want to do it.
Yeah, to me, GSP, like, if you really want legacy fights, Khabib, Conor McGregor, that might be it. Maybe Tyron Woodley, if you want to go back and win that title, but... There's not a whole lot of options for GSP where you're really going to be like, okay, well, this is really going to help his legacy if he beats this person.
Yeah, and he's really slimming down. If you look at some of his pictures,
he's
his fasting
he's
and keto.
He's back to 170 GSP, yeah.
Yeah, like his fasting and his keto like stuff that he's doing, like he's really cut down a lot.
No,
he's
Khabib kept calling out GSP during that fight week, and GSP was like, I'm not interested. And if he's not interested in Khabib and he wants a legacy-defining fight, like who? There's nobody out there. Yeah. Like if Khabib's not the guy, then who?
I don't know.
He doesn't want to fight Askren. He doesn't want to fight Khabib.
The only one that would probably get him up is Conor.
Yeah. But Conor's got other stuff going on. Like, Conor's going to have, like, if they did Conor versus GSP instead of Conor versus Khabib, I think a big segment of the diehard fans would be a little bit annoyed. Yeah.
What's your take with Conor now? Is there, like, if you're the UFC and you have Conor now, how do you play the game?
So, Conor's got a hearing in June. I think it's June 14th. He's got a hearing in New York. If he gets, he'll probably get probation. I don't think he's going to go to jail. He'll probably, what I've been guessing all along is that he'll plead guilty to the misdemeanors and they'll waive the
sentence or whatever.
No, not the sentence. The crimes, like the felonies.
The felonies.
They'll waive the felony charges and he'll do community service and probably pay some money or something. That's just a guess. I mean, I don't really know. But as soon as I saw those charges and that he had a felony charge and a bunch of misdemeanors, I'm like, he'll probably plead to the misdemeanors. They'll throw out the felonies. But I think the UFC, what they might do is, you know, once that comes down, they'll be like, okay, well, you're suspended for however many months they know he's not going to fight for.
Yeah, it's and
3 months.
They're going to strategically do it.
Which would be the right thing to do from a business standpoint.
Because New York could probably say he can't fight for a year.
Yeah, you never know.
You know, 2 years, they can give him an actual commission suspension.
But I don't think they would.
No?
You never know, though. I don't think the New York commission care. Like, I think that if you look at the past events in New York, it seems like they're doing things that whatever they want to do. And there were those issues, you know, leading up to the Iaquinta and eventually the Iaquinta-Khabib fight. And when we asked Dana White about the New York commission, he had nothing but good things to say about them. So I don't know if that's because of the Conor thing.
He
and he's like,
to.
Okay, he has to, you know.
But regardless, they could. I know everybody's saying that the commissions could work together. But if the UFC really wanted to, they have Russia because they just confirmed Russia, I think, in June. Is it not? They're going.
They haven't confirmed it, but they've been saying September has been kind of.
If they work their feet in there, they get their feet wet in Russia, it runs well. Nothing says we can't put, you know, Conor there or in Europe, right?
Yeah, but Dana was recently saying he thinks that if they do Khabib versus Conor, it'll be in Vegas. He says that's a fight you need to bring to Vegas.
Yeah.
So that, to me, indicates that they're looking at December 30th because, you know, they're doing October in Vegas, but I just don't think that
that quick of a turnover. They need the promotion.
Yeah, yeah.
They
and
need the
Khabib
hype.
Says he wants to fight at the end of the year. So, you know,
we'll
I think that would make the most sense is that end of year card. So we'll see what happens there.
So back to your boy Diaz.
Yeah. So who do you want to see Nate Diaz fight? Like, if you could choose any opponent for Nate Diaz, I personally think there are two answers that make a lot of sense to me. But who do you think he should fight?
Like, are we looking for
in LA in August if he's coming back?
In LA in August, who?
Because most of the lightweights are available right now. The only top 15 lightweights that aren't available are Pettis and Chiesa and Felder and Vic.
And we're looking more probably at a lightweight he'll want to come back at. Did he talk about if he wants to do a...
Yeah, it would probably be lightweight. I don't think it would be welterweight. He was too small at welterweight.
What about, I don't know, what about a Justin Gaethje?
Yeah, I mean, that fight would make sense, but does it make sense really for Nate Diaz's standing? Like, if he beats a Justin Gaethje, does that help him get a rematch with Conor? Because ultimately, I think the goal for him is a rematch
with
Conor.
Money. Yeah, it's tough then. Who's your pick?
Well, to me, the obvious pick to me is Eddie Alvarez. I think if they can get him and Alvarez together, there's some beef between them from the past when Melendez fought Alvarez. I think that would be a fight that makes a lot of sense given, like, if you want to get thrust back into the title picture, Alvarez is ranked third. If Diaz beats Alvarez, suddenly he's right back in the title mix.
But why would Alvarez takes it for the money?
Yeah, oh yeah, absolutely. Because he wants a new contract. So if they say to him, okay, you know, we're going to give you a new contract, you have to fight Diaz, he'd be like, yeah, I'm all in. I'm going to make more money. It would just be a win-win
over
for him.
Over the Poirier? Because isn't the Poirier-Alvarez in the works, right?
That's what they've been saying, but apparently it's not there yet. They're working on it. They need a main event for that Calgary card. And they've been talking about the Nico Montano and Shevchenko, but apparently Montano hasn't signed the papers for that, and they might be moving forward from that. And then Alvarez versus... Apparently there was a deadline of some sort for Alvarez and Poirier to get signed, and I think it's past that deadline, so who knows what's going on there. But I think that would be the fight to make. But then the other option for me for Nate would be Kevin Lee.
Kevin Lee,
just because I think the run up to that fight would be a lot of fun.
Yeah. Well, yeah, those are the all ranked.
But
ahead
Diaz,
of them.
Like if I'm Nate Diaz and they say, okay, Nate, you've earned this. We're not going to give you Woodley. We're not going to give you Connor. Pick anybody else in the organization to fight. Who are you fighting? I think like the go-to answer should be Eddie Alvarez. I think it's a good matchup for him because I think Eddie will stand with him. And I also think that you could make that a main event.
Yeah, no, it makes sense.
In L.A., I mean, I don't know if you headline... Usually you don't headline non-title fights over title fights because you've got Dillashaw and Garbrandt there already. But if you were going to, that would be the fight to do it. Diaz-Alvarez fight.
Now there's even talk about Nick coming back as well.
I've heard that, yeah. Jake Shields mentioned that on Ariel's show last week.
Yeah, so that's exciting too.
Yeah. Now that brings up a good question of who you would put him against. Like, to me, I think Bisping would be a good answer. Have a Bisping swan song against Nick Diaz. That'd
be depends
fun.
How big... Nick
is
too, right?
185 or 170, because Nick could come back at welterweight also.
Yeah, that's what I would like to see him more at a welterweight, I would think.
Yeah. Well, then who do you put him against? Like, that could be interesting too, is who he would go against. Because, I mean, Woodley would probably want that fight, but from a credibility standpoint, I don't think you can thrust Nick Diaz into a title shot after whatever, a two-plus-year layoff.
Yeah, I don't know. There's some Robbie Lawler.
Yeah, the rematch. Yeah, that would be fun.
Robbie Lawler could be fine. Masvidal.
That would be a fun match. That would be a fun one with Masvidal, but who knows?
And then I think you're going too far down the rankings to make anything more exciting after that.
Yeah. So who knows? I think there's options there.
Or there's the super fight. You know, would GSP like that fight?
No, I mean they've done
too big
it already.
Now, but again, just to do it again,
I don't know. I just feel like there were no questions that came out of that first match. I think GSP just dominated them. So, I don't know. I mean, if GSP is concerned about legacy, that doesn't help his
doesn't
legacy
help
to be the guy
anyways.
That's been on the shelf for 3 years that he's already beaten.
Yeah.
So, who knows? What else do we got? So, there are some new fights. I just mentioned Vic versus Felder, Chiesa versus Pettis, but I wanted to pick your brain on Israel Adesanya getting thrown into the fire.
Yeah.
Main event against Brad Tavares at the Ultimate Fighter finale.
Yeah, we talked about that. Remember we were saying Tavares is underlooked a lot. Like, I mean, no one really looks at him as a big threat, but man, he is. He's got a lot of good knockout power, good team behind him in Ray Sefo.
Well, he hasn't had a finish in like 10 years before his last one. He does have power.
Yeah, but he's been known for his striking power.
Yeah.
I think it's a great fight. I think it's the right fight.
It's a good style matchup if you're going to put him up against a ranked type guy.
Yeah, it's striker versus matchup, striker.
At the same time, Tavares could easily take him down and just stay on top of him.
Like,
Tavares
big.
Is a big guy.
I was going to say size seems
probably
big.
More of a 205. I mean, I know he's fought at middleweight for most of his career. But he's a big 185er, and Adesanya is not.
Yeah, no, he's just tall and long, which makes him look a little smaller. But it's interesting. Power versus more length.
Yeah,
you know,
technique.
Like Adesanya's just what makes Adesanya so fun to watch.
Five rounds though, too.
Oh, it would be five rounds. Yeah. It's his distance control. It's his ability to kind of move, stay long, hit and move. And again, Tavares is going to really have to come in and close distance. So I think that long game of Adesanya is going to give Tavares trouble that night.
If this was a three-round fight, I think Tavares you'd give a good edge to. But five rounds, Adesanya will have the cardio to go five rounds. And Tavares tends to slow down as fights go on.
Yeah.
So if Adesanya can hang in there with him.
Well, Adesanya, if he's going to have to pace himself. He's done 5 3-minute rounds with kickboxing. I mean, the extra 2-minute rounds just means he's got to control the pace a little bit more.
That's going to be fun. I'm really looking forward to seeing how that one goes.
Yeah. The other one that I heard, I don't know if it was you mentioned it, but is it official? The Rockhold and Gustafson?
It's not official yet, but according to Combatch, and they're rarely wrong. It's like getting there. It's getting close to the finish line.
That's
a good fight. Yeah, I agree. I mean, the thing is, though, I don't know how... Like, I think Gustafson's going to be way bigger than Rockhold. But Rockhold was always a really big 185er.
But Gustafson's a different level.
And here's the other weird caveat to that is Bisping apparently said Rockhold's next fight is going to be an interim title light heavyweight fight. And, of course, Gustafson's saying, I'm only going to fight if it's an interim title fight. So if this is an interim title fight, let's say Rockhold wins and you've got Cormier as the champion and they're best buddies, like what happens?
What happens?
Cormier probably just stays at heavyweight and says, here you go.
Yeah.
It's your division now.
Because DC probably doesn't have much left either. Couple
DC
more
says
fights.
He wants to retire around the time he turns 40, which is next March.
Yeah.
So
that, like, meaning, he's got less than a year.
Like, if I'm Cormier, my mindset right now is beat Stipe, get Brock Lesnar.
And then call it.
Yeah. Because if he can beat Stipe and then beat Brock Lesnar, nobody's going to care about John Jones.
I was going to say the only thing that happens is if John Jones' suspension, he comes back.
Well, Jones' suspension, I think, is on until next March, like right around the time that.
But
then
they say they found some things that could get him off a little earlier.
No, because the commission already ruled on it. I think they ruled that it would be a year, and USADA has to do their own ruling on it too, because he failed both tests. So. Like, he failed the USADA test and the commission test, I believe.
Yeah.
And apparently, Ariel was saying on the MMA beat this week that he's not expecting any sort of hearing for it, like a public hearing, that the USADA, when they just make a determination of what it's going to be, are just going to come out with it.
But say he comes back in March, and then right away he's going to want a title fight.
Who, Jones?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then is that DC's going out fight, which would be the worst fight of his to take as going out after you go to heavyweight, after you do what you did? That's if he wins, right?
Yeah. Well, we'll have to see what happens with Brock. I think Brock is a big X factor right now in what happens going forward.
And it's official that he's coming back for one fight?
Because
with Dana at
Brock
WrestleMania.
He hasn't re-entered the USADA pool yet, so nothing's really official yet. There's been lots of rumblings
but
about Brock coming back.
But he tested positive, on his last test?
He tested positive for the same thing that Jones did at UFC 200, which was like an estrogen blocker.
Okay.
So
he got a suspension from it?
He got a suspension but then retired, so he got out of the testing pool. Now, in order for him to fight again, he needs to go back into the testing pool for 6 months.
Isn't that more of a strategic way for guys now? Like, if I'm someone, like a big profile guy like that, who wants to fight once a year, once every couple years, it's a smart move to do it. Retire after every fight, get out of the testing, be able to keep your body as strong as big and healthy, whatever you want to do, then hey. It's out of my system now. Let me get a fight in.
Yeah, and it's only 3 months, I believe, if you're coming back and you didn't test positive. Like, you don't have any previous positive tests.
Yeah.
Who knows? That could be a good
plan.
Could
be
a
strategy for other guys to do. But that's if the UFC wants to bring you back after you unofficially retire, right?
Yeah. We mentioned Ryzen earlier in the card. And Kyoji Horiguchi scored a 9-second win off a nice counter against Ian McCall. And a lot of people were saying, like, how did the UFC let this guy slip through the cracks? I mean, he lost to Demetrius Johnson at the last second of their title fight. But he looks like he's just much improved. He's got sharp striking.
Well, we had 9 seconds.
Yeah.
You know, 9 seconds.
But even before that, like, in the fights before that, he's looking like the real deal. So when you look at the worst free agency losses that the UFC have had, where do you rank Horiguchi? Like, do you think he's the worst to walk away from the UFC? Or do you look at guys like Rory?
I think Rory... Man, that's disappointing to me because in my eyes, I think Rory's still up there for the top welterweight. That would be my biggest letdown. I mean, you want to see the best welterweight against the best here, right? So, I mean, that's upsetting to see.
I'll tell you which one was the most surprising to me.
I'm trying to think now.
The most surprising to me was Chael Sonnen. Like, I know Chael Sonnen is not, the level of fighter that when you talk about a Rory or a Kyoji Horiguchi at this stage in his career, but he was a guy that just prints money. Like he's in terms of cutting promos, in terms of how versatile he is in the broadcasting sphere, in terms of what he can bring to your company. Like, unless he called Dana and was like, listen, I really like my release for such and such reasons. And Dana was like, okay, he's just a guy that I was shocked that they would let Bellator pick him up.
Yeah.
I just think he offers so much.
Oh, I think it's good though, because he's doing an analyst job. He's fighting. He's dipping into different things.
He just won
things.
In the tournament.
He's getting into
Rampage,
the tournaments.
Fighting
yeah.
Fedor. Like that's a huge fight for them now.
But what do you take from his style now? When we first remember pre and post Conor McGregor, right? Before Conor came, the trash talking was Chael Sonnen,
yeah.
A little bit more WWE style. Like I remember he came out and did this whole Vanderlei Silva thing. Did you see that? Talking to a shoe. And it's just he has this old school trash talk, which is kind of cool, too. And it's different. But with this new Conor era, everything is just it's Colby Covington. It's a little bit more aggressive. It's a little bit more
I still think
personal.
Chael would have, because Chael was like kind of the innovator of it, I still think he would have been relevant. Because he hasn't changed his style at all. Like, he still does the same thing. He was insulting
awesome.
Fedor last week. You know, like, he doesn't care. He's always wanted to... He's the weird thing about him is he's always calling guys out that he wants to fight that are, like, way out. Like, he called out Fedor, like, 2 years ago. He said he wanted to fight Fedor. Now the stars have aligned and he's going to. He was saying that while he was still competing at light heavyweight.
Yeah.
Had just moved from middleweight. He said he wanted to fight Fedor. Now it's coming into fruition, which is like, Chael's amazing at that. He's great at looking down the line at what he wants and making it happen. Like, he was calling out John Jones when nobody was calling out John Jones.
Yeah, he'd fight anyone, anytime.
Yeah.
He got fights with Anderson Silva when he probably shouldn't have based on his talking abilities.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, no, I hear you. I mean, especially now, like I think it's refreshing to hear his type of his you know, his words on the mic.
It. Yeah, I've always loved it. That was the one that surprised me the most. I don't know if it's because when you look at a guy like Horiguchi or Rory, they're still young and they've got a lot of years left.
Even Musasi, right?
Yeah, Musasi's another one.
Yeah, they let go and now he's, you know, doing well.
Yeah, he's probably going to win the championship against Carvalho.
Yeah,
I think that's coming up soon.
Yeah,
that's
soon.
The one. I think that's at the Bellator 200. So we'll know the result of that in the afternoon before they air it on television.
Yeah, I mean, there's
still baffles me.
Yeah, I don't get it either.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, those are probably the big ones. I mean, even now, there's some media saying how even Paul Daly's upset the way he's being treated by Bellator, and who knows. Who knows? I mean, they must have been offered Rory McDonald good money and good opportunity
sure.
to go. You
for
don't
sure.
just leave
Rory,
the UFC as
Rory
a
knew
top
he was
contender.
Gonna go. Like, it seemed Rory knew he was going to leave.
Yeah.
Like, even before his last fight against Thompson.
Yeah. No, it's interesting to see what they're offering different than the UFC. You got to think Rory's had to have been making some good money in the UFC.
Oh, yeah.
So
or, was on, or was on pace to.
Yeah, at least.
He also thought that he could really cash in when it came to the sponsorship side, and he has. Like, he's been getting lots of... Like Dash, which is like a cryptocurrency company, sponsors him and pays him money in Dash, and he's made a lot of money in that way, in that regard.
Huh. Yeah. Interesting. I'm sure he's a smart guy. He's always had that GSP approach to him with his training and his business. And I mean, I hope, I hope he does well regardless. I even reached out to him to do some training, so hopefully he got back to me saying yeah, because his last fight with Lima's right, he wasn't blocking the low kicks well. So I just reached out to him and I was like, hey man, you know we're Canadian dudes, mm-hmm. both welterweights. Let's get some training. He goes, I would love to. So let's see if he actually takes me up on my offer.
See if he follows through with it. Because I guess he doesn't have a fight lined up right now. So he's got some time. I think he's out west right now, actually. Before we start breaking down UFC 224, which has a lot of, I think, interesting fights, let's chat with somebody who's in the co-main event, and that's Kelvin Gastelum. Always love catching up with Calvin, and he joins us now on the TSN MMA show.
Ladies and gentlemen, it's time to introduce this week's guest.
I'm now joined by a man who will be in the co-main event of UFC 224, a big card coming up in Brazil. That's Kelvin Gastelum, big stakes against Jacaré. Middleweight title fight could be in sights for the winner of this fight. Have they made it clear to you that this fight could be for the number one contendership, Kelvin?
There hasn't been any promises, but I feel like it could be. You know, I feel like the winner of this should and will fight for the title later this year.
You know, Jacaré has said he's had thoughts of retiring in the past. Does it invigorate you knowing that he may be having those thoughts while you're so young in your career and hungry for a title shot?
I feel like that would be a lot of my advantage. I'm just young, hungry, and I really want that title shot, you know, where I feel like Jacaré has done already a lot in the sport. He's been champion before, so I don't know how hungry he is for this fight.
I know you were disappointed that Romero got the title shot over you, at least for the interim title, but how disappointed are you that Mike Perry declined your friendship request on Facebook?
Not disappointed at all. It was funny because one day I just wake up and I see a notification on my Facebook from Mike Perry comment. I looked at it. And I didn't respond. You know, he commented, "Oh, Jacaré is going to strangle you," and I didn't respond. I didn't like it or anything. And what I wanted to do was kind of mess with him and see what he did if I sent him my friend request. But ended up backfiring because I kind of felt like a fool when he put me on blast like that.
He trains with Romero, doesn't he? Or at least in proximity to him. They're both in Orlando.
Yeah, I think he trains with Jacaré, which is why he.
Sorry, yeah, that's what I meant, Jacaré, not Romero.
Yeah, it trains out in ATT.
Wow, so that's interesting. I mean, I don't know what's going on with you. I never know, but I always ask you. I mean, is welterweight still in your future, or are you focused strictly on middleweight going forward?
Well, right now I am focused on middleweight, but I feel like a return to welterweight could be, you know, in the future still. I feel like, you know, I could compete in both weight classes and do well.
If they introduced the 165 division and moved welterweight to 175, is 175 pretty much a no-brainer for you? That's like your optimal weight?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. That would be a no-brainer. Absolutely. And I feel like they should do that. I don't know why there's every other weight class, you know, has 125, 35, 45, 55, and then it jumps over to 170 all of a sudden. You know, why can't there be a 165 and a 175 class?
I guess the worry would be oversaturation or too many titles. Do you think that that's actually an issue, or do you think that the more championship titles that are available, the better it is for UFC cards?
Well, they do it with boxing. You know, there's multiple titles and multiple weight classes. So I feel like it could work with us as well.
That's kind of been the argument against it, I guess, is that there's been too many titles in boxing. But I guess this is kind of a different story because the UFC is the promotion in MMA. When you look at boxing, there's all these different governing bodies and everybody just gets confused. Do you think that that's what the big difference is?
I think so. You know, there's the IBO, the WBO, there's WBC, and you know, there's a lot of these organizations with all these world titles, whereas the UFC, they'd just be one organization, you know.
And I think there are a lot of guys, I mean, like Kevin Lee, for example, would really thrive at 165. And, you know, Johnny Hendricks might be able to make 175. It would help a lot of the people. It seems like all of the major weight cuts are at lightweight. You look at Gilbert Burns most recently and at welterweight. So wouldn't this kind of be a good way to solve some of the extreme weight cutting that goes on in those two particular divisions?
Yeah, I mean, there's arguments on both sides, whether it's the oversaturation of championship fights or but then and then there's the other side where it would help a lot of fighters and it'd be beneficial for the sport. So I think I'm on the side where it'd be beneficial for me.
and also for the sport?
Yeah, for sure. Absolutely. Because fighters wouldn't be missing weight as much. You know, if you open up those weight classes, it could help a lot of fighters out, a lot of people out.
There's a bit of a renaissance period going on right now at middleweight when you look at it. You know, you've got yourself, Whitaker's the champion, he's young. Paulo Costa's fighting at UFC 226. A lot of people are paying attention to him. Obviously, Israel Adesanya's made a big name for himself, and he's going to be headlining a card in July. Antonio Carlos Jr. looks good. Rockhold's moving over to middleweight. And then you look at the top of the division, and recent years it's just been occupied by older guys like Bisping. Chris Weidman's getting up there. Your opponent, Jacare Romero. Is this kind of the next generation of middleweight that's starting to peek its head out a little bit?
I think so. Well, I mean, all these guys have been in the top 10 for a really long time, and I think it's just the passing of the torch that's going on right now. You know, right now the youngest guys on the top 10 are me and Whitaker, you know, and it is what it is for now.
I mean, you say for now, but if you look at, you know, 2 months from now, that whole thing could be clear. If you get a win, if Whitaker gets a win, it's pretty much out with the old and with the new.
Correct. That would be the plan. I think that'd be a fun fight. I think a lot of fans would enjoy that fight. I think our styles mesh up really well to create a very fun fight for everybody.
That's kind of the cool thing if there was a fight between you and Whitaker is styles make fights. You know, that's the old cliche in MMA. But I think in particular, you and Whitaker, as you mentioned, would just be a very fun matchup. I think that it would be a real chess match on the feet. I think that you would probably have the advantage in the grappling, but I don't even know if you would need to take it there because your striking is so good at middleweight.
Yeah, no, I mean, I agree. I think our styles mesh up really well to create a really, really fun fight. And I think a lot of fans would enjoy it.
Well, here's the million-dollar question. Is Whitaker kind of almost an easier matchup for you than Jacare? Not that Whitaker's an inferior fighter to Jacare, but just in terms of the style comparisons.
Yeah, just because of the level of jiu-jitsu that Jacare brings. I mean, it's going to be a grinding fight. You know, it's not one of those fights where it's going to be standing up and you know, I get to box. Nope, it's not going to be. I don't think it's going to be that kind of fight. I think it'll be a grinding fight where I'm gonna have to be defending a lot of the takedowns and defending myself on the ground. So it's just different styles and different kind of fight.
I mean, Jacare's been keeping it standing, I guess. Against Brunson, he did, and he was able to get the finish there. Against Whitaker, he did, and that didn't work out well for him. We saw him knock out Belfort. So do you think that maybe he might try to see what you've got on the feet, at least to start things off?
Well, I think so, yeah. His last few fights, he's been trying to knock people out. So that'll be fun, you know, if he wants to slug it out. It'll be fun. It'll be a fun fight to watch.
You got that recent win over Michael Bisping, but did suffer a loss at the hands of Chris Weidman. Do you think that when you match up against a guy that's kind of bigger, that likes to grapple, that's kind of, you know, the toughest matchup that you can face in this division?
Yeah, I mean, that's just really the only element that that I feel I'm at a disadvantage when bigger guys try and lay on top. I mean, but I feel like I've learned from the Weidman fight. I have different strategies than what I had in that fight, and corrected a lot of the mistakes that I did for that fight.
It's been just over 5 years since you won the Ultimate Fighter and made your way into the organization after you beat Uriah Hall. You and Uriah have become kind of tight since then. I saw somebody was, I guess, taking a shot at Uriah on Twitter, and you kind of had his back and said, you got to look more into what this guy does behind the scenes. Tell us a little bit about Uriah. You know, what should we learn about Uriah Hall?
Yeah, I don't know what the fighter's name was, but he said Uriah hadn't, is everything what's wrong with the martial arts today? And I thought that was just completely erroneous of him to say, because I know Uriah, I know his story, I know what he's done in the sport. You know, he's you know, back before getting the Ultimate Fighter, I mean, he was telling me just how he went to the tryouts with $20 in his pocket, you know, and just telling me how he had to go from one side of the city to the other side of the city just to teach classes, just to get by, you know, and that was his daily life, was running around teaching MMA or karate and to these little children. You know, he has a lot of kids that look up to him and who call him sensei, because he taught them since they were little kids. And I just feel like that was just wrong comments to say. He doesn't know much about Uriah's story with martial arts and how he was bullied when he was young and how he used self-defense classes to kind of defend himself. Yeah, I mean, you know.
Yeah, well, it's good to kind of get that side of Uriah, because I, you know, a lot of what fighters do outside of, I guess, the public eye is, you know, it's not often talked about. So I'm glad you were able to shed some light on that. And I'm feeling
well,
general.
Yeah.
Sorry, go ahead.
Well, yeah, it was this guy. I don't know his name, but he, you know, he's this.
I think it was Anthony Smith.
Shaved guy with a lot of tattoos.
Yeah.
Just kind of looks like a, I don't know.
Was Anthony Smith? He's a UFC fighter.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know what his beef with Uriah is. That is very strange.
I don't know either.
Well, I'm feeling generous today. I noticed you. I'm going to give you a good plug here. I noticed kgastelum.com, your official website, has been launched, but your logo is fantastic. I don't know who designed this thing, but the hats on your website,
they're
really sharp.
Oh, thank you, man. Thank you. I appreciate that. Yeah. No, I hired this graphic designer to help me with my logo, and I think he hated me by the end, because I sent him back like 10, 20 times to kind of do the, you know, design the logo that I feel represents me, and he did a good job.
Well, you picked the right logo. It looks really sharp. I like those hats. They really got my.
I might bum
one off of you next time I see you at an event.
Yeah, absolutely, man.
All right, Kelvin. Well, it's always great catching up with you. Good luck at UFC 224. Should be a fun one against Jacare. Hopefully it has title implications for you.
Yes, hopefully it does. Thank you very much for having me on.
That was Kelvin Gastelum. He's going to be facing Ronaldo Jacare Souza for the chance to fight for the middleweight title, likely against the winner of Whitaker versus Romero. And as I mentioned in that interview, I think Gastelum matches up really well against Whitaker. Like, if they fight, I think Gastelum has a good shot against Whitaker, and even against a guy like Romero, he would have a solid shot. But I think Jacare, of those guys, is probably the worst matchup for him.
Yeah, I agree. It's just that power he's got, man. I think he's got that good power that can change the game. Whitaker, very technical, but Gastelum's a guy that'll just come forward and just kind of drop those bombs on you out of nowhere. So, yeah, I agree with you there.
When I saw what he did to Tim Kennedy in Toronto last December.
Yeah.
Or two Decembers ago, I guess.
But
that was crazy.
Jacare's just a different level, though, right?
He is. Well, Jacare's just going to be a lot bigger than Gastelum, and His BJJ is
you,
crazy.
Once
like, yeah,
he
once
grabs
he you,
that's the issue, right?
And he just won by knockout over Brunson. So
that power's not there once, you know, you have a Jacare on you, grabbing you and, you know, throwing you to the ground like that.
Yeah, so we'll see what happens in that fight. I think that's going to be a tough matchup for Gastelum. But Gastelum, again, like if he can keep this on the feet, he's got enough power to take out
a gamer.
A Jacare, yeah.
He's definitely a gamer.
He's not one of these guys that I'm going to write off. Like, I think that fight could go
either
way.
He's a guy, yeah. Like, whoever, even if he's a huge underdog, you take him because he's going to bring the fight.
Yeah.
He's going to come forward. He's going to do his thing. He's going to try his best and leave it all out there. So you can't go wrong with it.
That said, I think he should probably be a bigger underdog in this spot, in my opinion.
Yeah.
No disrespect. I just spoke to the guy. So. Nunes versus Pennington. That's the main event. Nunes is basically like almost a 7-1 favorite here.
Yeah.
And I guess rightfully so. I mean, Pennington does not have a lot of paths to victory. To me, Pennington's path to victory is if she can just keep it on the feet and outstrike Nunes just with volume and can connect. I don't know if she's going to be able to. I don't think she has a good shot of winning inside the distance here, but I think she could win by decision if she's able to just outpoint Nunes. That's really the only.
It's going to be tough.
That's really the only path to victory I would give her.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, there's not much to do. Nunes is just, she's dominating, man.
Yeah.
Like, she's got all of her areas of her game, you know, cleaned up, looking sharp. I mean, she's the full package.
Yeah,
so.
I'm just surprised that Pennington got this title shot when you have someone like Ketlin Vieira who's been tearing through everybody.
Yeah.
You know, I think she needs to get the next shot. I think
yeah,
she
I
has
agree
earned
with you.
It. Unless you can put together Nunes-Cyborg. Like, that's a fight that I'd be interested to see.
But that's stopped talking about that,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, I'm still talking about it.
Yeah?
That's one that I want to see. Because in my opinion, I think Nunes is the best women's mixed martial artist of all time, just based on resume. Like, I think if you look at Cyborg, I don't think she's fought anybody competitive aside from Holly Holm in basically almost her entire career.
Yeah, I agree.
In MMA,
we haven't never really seen her in too much trouble.
And what's
or,
Holly Holm's like? Holly Holm's record in the UFC is like now has now become
now.
Subpar.
Yeah, all fighting top, but the names, but still, yeah, subpar for sure.
Yeah,
she doesn't have that. You need someone that can threaten Cyborg on her feet. Someone with power, I feel. Like someone who's going to touch Cyborg, like, you know, with little jabs and movement. Nah, Cyborg's going to walk through that. You need someone with game-changing power
and that's
to
Nunes.
Slow.
Yeah.
Yes, yes. So that's why I feel that fight is the one
and
to
Nunes
make.
Nunes has fought several times at featherweight, too. Yeah. It's not like she'd be moving up that much in weight.
You need to give Cyborg some power. You need to give her a shot, and you got to make her feel it. And you got to make her think twice from just getting so openly aggressive. So. Yeah, let's see.
But
let's
I think Nunes wins this fight. I think she can win it by submission or even knockout. Like, she can win it pretty much anywhere.
Yeah.
And she can win by decision if it goes 5 rounds.
Yeah.
I don't know if it will, but with Pennington's not an easy out. I don't even know if Pennington's ever been finished. I think Andrade might have finished her, if I'm not mistaken. I'm gonna look that up now.
Yeah,
but
not a great record, 9-6.
Who, Pennington? Yeah,
yeah,
I know.
9-6, but Nunes, 15 wins, 4 losses.
She has been finished by Kat Zingano, and that's it. And that was an Invicta. And that was by submission. But, yeah, I mean, otherwise, she's won 4 in a row. I think she's earned the title shot. Like, she has some good wins. She beat Andrade. She beat Misha Tate. And Andrade, of course, is a strawweight now. But she beat Misha Tate. She beat Andrade. Beat Besh Kohea. So she's beaten basically, like, former champion, title contender in Kohea. And now Andrade is a title. She was a title contender at strawweight. So. She has a good resume. So the problem she hasn't fought in like a year and a half. So we'll see what Pennington, how much she's evolved really in that time.
Yeah.
Mackenzie Dern and Amanda Cooper is an interesting one because really if Dern gets this to the ground, I don't know. I think she can submit Cooper, no problem.
Yeah. Are they feeding? I don't know much about Cooper.
Well, Cooper had a really good win, but it was against Angela Magana, who I think a lot of people would agree was kind of at the bottom of the strawweight division, women's strawweight division. But Cooper's like a tough opponent. Like, she's not going to be an easy out, but Cooper has, I think, all of her losses have come by submission. So
yeah, like
this does seem like a spot where they're
putting
Dern in.
And of her wins, she's 4-3 and
yeah, 3 submissions.
50% of her wins are by submission. So, I mean, she's more submission-based than striking. Mackenzie Dern, you need to put punches in her face to try to slow her down
Cooper,
and have
Cooper's
a decent
striking
takedown.
Looked really good, though, in December when she fought against Magana.
Yeah, but again, if it's building Mackenzie Dern. She's the money. She's the ticket. You got to build her. So you got to give her someone that can push her a little bit, but in the right way. So
I think the odds should be a little longer than they are in this fight right now. The Dern's about -230. You know, she opened at -450, so a lot of money came in on Cooper early, and the line has kind of stayed there. Lineker versus Kelleher. This is an interesting one because Brian Kelleher has really exceeded expectations. He had that big win over Henan Barrow recently, and that... you know, that's really put him into the stratosphere of the bantamweights. I mean, back-to-back wins, Stasiak and Barrow. He did lose to Marlon Vera by submission in the first round. So, he is beatable, but wins over Yuri Alcantara, two wins over Julio Arce, who looks like a good prospect in the UFC. So, he's a good fighter. Lineker, though, is just kind of a different kind of animal.
But why are they giving Lineker an unranked opponent? Him being number 6 in the ranking.
Is Kelleher,
only one
is Kelleher unranked?
Yeah, he's unranked.
Oh, really? That's
according
surprising.
To the UFC. And his Lineker's last loss was TJ Dillashaw.
Yeah.
He beat Marlon Vera.
And then
Dotson.
Before that, he hadn't lost in like 3 years.
Yeah. So, I mean, why is he fighting an unranked opponent is
that's
my
a good
question.
Maybe he just wanted to fight in Brazil, and that's who they could get to sign to fight. Because the bantamweight division is pretty busy right now. If you look at the standings, I don't think there are a lot of guys available to fight that haven't either recently fought or are fighting.
Well, yeah. No, they don't.
Aside from like a Dominic Cruz.
Well, Marlon Moraes,
He's fighting in June.
Jimmy Rivera, 4.
He's fighting in June.
Asensau, 3.
Sunset would have been okay, but have they fought? No, they haven't fought.
Dominic Cruz, 2. Garbrandt, 1. Yeah. And Champ Dillashaw.
And Garbrandt and Dillashaw are matched up. So there's not a whole lot of options for Lineker. And,
but still, anyone below him from 7 to 15.
Yeah.
You know?
That's true. I always love watching Lineker fight, and I think Kelleher's an exciting fighter, too. So that should be a fun one. Got to kind of think that Lineker's going to be able to get it done either by knockout or by decision, but who knows? Kelleher, I think, is an underrated fighter.
Yeah.
Lyoto Machida, Vitor Belfort. This should be interesting because Belfort, again, he won a decision against Nate Marquardt and looked pretty good in that fight. So I think this is a fight that goes the distance potentially and that Belfort could get it done.
Yeah, I mean, I don't see him being an underdog, really. When I first saw it, I thought he would have been a little bit more even money, if anything. But, yeah, pretty surprising to have Machida as a minus 265 favorite.
And then there's an interesting one with Carl Robertson against Mutanch, Cesar Ferreira. Mutanch does not have a very good chin, so if Robertson is able to connect, I think it's going to be lights out. But I think Ferreira is a very well-rounded fighter, and I think that could give Robertson fits.
Yeah, I mean, how's his jiu-jitsu? Is it
very good?
Very good.
He's just
right?
good on the ground. He's a very big big fighter for the weight class.
Well, let's see what Baby K's got to do.
Yeah, so... he's coming off a split decision win over Marquardt, lost to Elias, and then 3 straight wins over Jack Hermanson, Anthony Smith, and Olawalek Bambosi. Those are all good wins. So,
and Robertson's still undefeated?
Robertson's still undefeated. So that's going to be a very interesting fight. I think that, Robertson had that submission win in the last fight.
Against
so
Darren
showing
Stewart.
That he's got lots of tools. Actually, he's got more wins by submission than he does by knockouts in MMA, which is shocking.
Yeah, UFC 1-1. His debut was that Contender Series, right?
Yeah.
That we talked about earlier. It was that vicious elbows. Yeah, he just bashed
Ryan
opponent.
Spann. Yeah. In 15 seconds, yeah.
Just elbow,
went for a shot, for a shot, right? Yeah,
held
I remember
it framed
that.
Up and just banged away some elbows. Yeah,
the Travis Brown elbows, as Joe Rogan calls them. Alexei Olenek versus Junior Albini. Now, this is one that I find to be a very interesting fight because I think that there's a really good shot that we see a submission win here for Olenek. Because I just think, I don't know how polished Albini is. Now, Albini's 14-3. He's coming off a loss to Arlovski, but he did beat a good grappler in Timothy Johnson. So, you know, Olenek's going to have to really weather an early storm if he wants to win this fight.
Albini's a favorite, too.
Albini's the favorite.
Yep.
And I think rightfully so. I think Albini's just younger at this point in time. I think I saw that Olenek's first MMA fight happened when Albini was like 5 years old, because Olenek's been around forever. Olenek's got a kickboxing-esque record of... 52-11-1.
Yeah, that's definitely a kickboxing record.
So he's coming off a loss to Curtis Blaydes in a very kind of controversial loss because it looked like Blaydes had connected with an illegal shot there, but they decided to give it to Blaydes for whatever reason. And 2 nice wins over Travis Brown. He had a nice submission, and then he had that really strange Ezekiel choke from bottom submission, one of the weirdest ones I think I've ever seen in the UFC against Victor Peshta.
Yep.
So he has a good record. He's beaten Krokop. Like, he's got a lot of good wins. So I just think Olenek has a good experience edge. Now, I also thought that he'd have a good shot against Blaydes just because of the style contrast, but Blaydes just mauled him.
Yep.
I just don't know if Albini is as high level as Blaydes.
And Blaydes, here's your prospect you've been calling out for a while now. So.
And I just thought Olenek might be able to do something sneaky against him just because Blaydes was pretty raw. But Blaydes has proven to be the real deal.
What I like about your analysis of the fights, you always give a guy a fair chance.
Yeah,
I
absolutely.
Like that. I like that.
Even Pennington earlier, I was saying.
Yeah, you always give a fair chance to the other. You never.
You don't want to say, oh, this person's got no shot.
He's going to destroy it. No, but you actually, and you give good reasons why, too. So I like that approach.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that.
Yeah, but everyone's usually
like,
oh, they're going to get destroyed.
They look at the odds. And, yeah.
Yeah. they look at the odds, but you actually give and you're like, hey, you know what? Yeah, you're a big favorite, but this is what they got to do to win, which is the right way to do it.
Except for, like, in the event of Cyborg versus Kunitskaya, I just couldn't see a path.
Yeah, because it's also respecting the other person, right? You got to respect them as a martial artist, as an athlete, right?
For
They're
sure.
there for a reason, so.
That's one thing I've really learned over the years is that, and I think in the UFC, it's been proven time and time again that nobody, you can't count people out in this sport.
Yeah.
Like, people, because it even if somebody is more talented than another person, and more well-rounded, and people have bad nights.
Yeah, bad nights.
People have bad nights, and
wrong.
People have good nights.
Yeah, I agree.
You know, so if somebody who's really high level, like let's say Lineker, for example, against Kelleher, like Lineker, by all accounts, should win that fight. But if he has a bad night, Kelleher can beat him easily. Like he could, and we've seen Lineker have bad nights before.
Yeah.
So it's just one of those situations where you can't really write them off.
No, I agree. I mean, you have to sometimes predict, but the way you say it, there always is a chance. There's that puncher's chance, but I mean, I hate saying puncher's chance because that's a luck thing.
Yeah.
But if you're there and you're matched up, you have a chance, you have an opportunity. I mean, again, I could relate to my career. It's if I didn't get that shot, everybody thought I was going to lose too, right? But people need to just win. That's it. Just go in there and fight your heart out.
So we also have Nick Hine versus Davi Ramos. Ramos is a very good jiu-jitsu practitioner, but Nick Hine's stocky and tough, and you know he always sticks around in these fights.
Yeah. Is German?
Yes.
Nick Hine.
Yes,
Hine.
The rare German. He's actually like part of the German, like basically the equivalent of the SWAT team, if I recall.
Yeah, he's got a lot of experience. 14-2, but who knows?
Well, he's on a 3-fight win streak, but all the guys I think that he's beaten are no longer in the UFC. The only guy that he's beaten that's still in the UFC is Drew Dober. And he lost to James Vick, but losing to James Vick is nothing to be upset about. James Vick's a ranked guy now.
And he's got a big fight coming up too, doesn't he?
Against Felder, yeah.
He's fighting Felder.
That'll be fun. But Davi Ramos, like, he has high level jiu-jitsu. Has a nice win over Chris Grusemacher, which looks even more impressive given Grusemacher's win over Lozon recently where he looked really good. His debut in the UFC was against Sergio Moraes, who's an even better jiu-jitsu practitioner than he is. But that was not really a shocking loss. Alizu Zaleski versus Sean Strickland. That's going to be one that's opening up the prelim card. And that's one of the best fights on the card. Two really high-level prospects. So Zaleski Dos Santos is winner of 4 straight. His last win's over Max Griffin, who most notably just beat Mike Perry. His only loss is a split decision loss to Nicholas Dalby, who's a very tough guy. And then you look at Sean Strickland, and Strickland's most recent loss is to Usman, and his other loss to Ponzinibbio. So these are like, you know, everybody's thought of Strickland as a really high-level prospect, and I think that...
And his only other loss is to Ponzinibbio,
which is, again, top
contender.
Two top guys. So this is one where we're really going to see who is going to be established as a future contender in this division. I think that's going to be a really exciting fight. Warley Alves versus Sultan Aliyev. I did a little bit of research on Aliyev this week. I was watching his fights and because I saw that this was a pretty
he's built, you know, pretty he's beastly.
Alves is he's a pretty big favorite here, and Alves hasn't looked great of late. But I think he's deservedly a favorite here. I just didn't see much from Aliyev when I watched his previous fights.
Yeah, it looks like he's all powerhouse. Like he's pretty big.
Yeah, he's stocky.
All of his no submission wins.
Yeah,
71% knockout ratio. So.
Alves, I thought was going to be a killer after watching him on The Ultimate Fighter Brazil, but he has a win over Colby Covington, but three straight fights. He's 1-2 in his last 3. Lost to Barbarena.
Submission
lost to
or decision win.
Yeah,
your pick.
Yeah, I think that he'll be able to beat Sultan Aliyev here. I think he'll be able to finish him. Talas Leitas versus Jack Hermanson. This was an interesting one to me too because I think Leitas is kind of a better fighter here. I think he's a more well-rounded fighter, and this is one of those ones where he can just outpoint Hermanson.
And he's had such an up and down in his career, eh? Like he went,
Leitas,
he
fought went for on, a title.
Fought Silva, which is one of the most boring fights.
Then
I
he was
saw.
Out of the then he was out of the UFC for
and
a
then
while.
Came back.
And he's only 2-4 in his last 4, but those losses are to Tavares, Jotko, Musasi, and Bisping. So, top level guys.
Yeah, because of his earlier UFC times, right? He's getting forced to fight these bigger names, but this is more of a fight, I think, that we can see more out of him, right?
Yeah, but look at the 3 fights before those last 6 that I mentioned. He's got a win over Tim Boach, win over Francis Carmont by knockout. In 20 seconds into the second round, which is pretty crazy. Win over Trevor Smith, win over Ed Herman, win over Tom Watson. These are like tough guys.
What happened to Francis Carmont?
He's in Bellator.
Okay.
Yeah, he left to go to Bellator. He hasn't fought in a little bit.
I haven't
heard
his name come up in a while.
Yeah, so he left and did. He hasn't done much. I can tell you right now because I can pull it up. But in Bellator, he is 2-3-2. But the guys he lost to are like Lyndon Vassell and Phil Davis, two of the top guys.
Names.
Yeah, and the guys he's beaten are guys that I don't recognize their names, so I don't know. It's kind of squash fights. Alberto Mina versus Ramazan Ameev. Now, Alberto Mina is an interesting guy, and the reason I say that is he has not lost. He's undefeated, and his first fight was in May of 2005, so he has not lost a fight in 13 years. I think he's, of everybody in the UFC, he's got the longest undefeated streak in terms of time.
Yeah.
Like longer than Cyborg, longer than Demetrius. But he's an underdog in this fight.
Yeah, it doesn't mean anything. I mean, it just means maybe he didn't fight big names in those times of years, you know?
His biggest win is over Mike Pyle.
Yeah.
So, I mean, and he only fights like once every 1 or 2 years. So
good strategy. Yeah. Still a decent record.
Yeah,
hey,
great record, yeah. So if he can get the win here, like, it's going to look all the more impressive against a guy like Ameev, who's like a really high-level combat
sambo guy. And he's 36 years old, so he better pick up the pace.
Yeah.
Yeah, if he wants to do something.
Yeah, it seems like he's content to fight just once a year. We'll see how that goes. And then the curtain jerker is Perez versus Bokhnovic. So
the curtain jerker. I never heard that. I like
yeah,
it.
Yeah, that's the first fight on the card, the curtain
jerker.
I like it.
Well,
we'll get to we'll talk about who we have as our picks. Joe has surpassed me in terms of the picks with
yeah,
his
I know. You were all
he had a big win
last week. You were
I was at 102 and you were at like 70 something and now suddenly the tables have turned completely.
Yeah.
But before
Branch,
we do
good old Branch got me up there.
Exactly. Well, before we get to that, let's talk to Mackenzie Dern, who we discussed earlier fighting Amanda Cooper on the card, and she joins us now on the TSN MMA show. I'm now joined by Mackenzie Dern, who just under 2 months ago got her first win in her UFC debut. Obviously a big fight coming up in Brazil. What's it going to be like to fight in Brazil? This is going to be your first professional MMA fight in Brazil.
Yes, for sure. I'm so excited. You know, this is a fight that I had asked for, you know, like, oh man, I hope they can put me to fight in Brazil. So the fact that they were able to put me on the card and, you know, to be in Rio, like, of course, to fight anywhere in Brazil is great, but also specifically to be in Rio, with like the main card being Amanda Nunes and Raquel, you know, it's like the girls' main event, you know. So I'm just so happy to be on this card and to be in Brazil. It will also be like the first time my dad will see me fight live, you know. So it's just so many great things that are coming for this fight. I think it's going to be, has everything to be like the best night of my life.
The last time I interviewed you, you talked about how your dad doesn't like to come and watch your fights. He likes to watch it on TV and kind of stay at a length. What made him decide to come this time around?
You know, I think it was a mix because I will be in Brazil, you know, like my grandma, my family will be there. And I think like a mix, the fact that I'm going to fight in Brazil, like, and I'm a Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu fighter, you know, he really wants to be there like for me. And also too, I want him to be there. You know, I've been like asking him like, oh, come, you know, I want him to be there. I don't want him to go like, you know, 10 fights with never being there. And then maybe if I'm winning, I might get superstitious, and maybe on the, like, if I fight for the title, not want him to be there, you know. So I want to break that now, and I said, Dad, come, you know, I want you to be there, and, like, be with me, like, supporting me, you know, if I win or lose, you know, like, I want to be used to you being there, you know. So the sooner the better. So I think it was just a perfect opportunity. It's crazy how, like, he never was at the fights, but, man, I can't ask for a better first fight for him to be at the one in Brazil, you know? So everything happens for a reason.
How nervous do you think he's going to be? More nervous than you?
Oh, yeah, for sure. I think he's going to be so nervous. I don't even think he's expecting. I don't even think he knows how nervous he's going to be, you know? I think he thinks he'll be okay, but I really think he's going to be so nervous.
Well, I'm sure you're looking forward to that and looking forward to having a family in attendance. So you've got a tough opponent ahead of you. Amanda Cooper looked very good at UFC 218 late last year against Angela Magana. She's an up-and-coming fighter. Do you think that this is a favorable matchup for you? I mean, obviously, her three losses have all come by submission.
Yes, for sure. I definitely think it's a better fight for me than Ashley. You know, Ashley was like a southpaw. She's taller than me, longer than me. Her losses have always been like by decisions. You know, so she's like a tough girl to submit. Brown belts in jiu-jitsu, you know. So Ashley was definitely like, I think, a harder matchup for me, and especially like for the debut. And I think that Amanda is way better you know, my hide, you know, which is, I don't know, maybe blue or purple or something, I don't know, in jiu-jitsu. But, you know, her like you said, her submissions, her losses have been by submissions, you know. So I definitely think it's a way better matchup for me. The only thing is just, you know, it has been, like, fast since my last fight, you know. And even before, outside of the UFC, my Invicta fight and my LFA fights, like, in the last 7 months, this will be my first fight in 7 months, you know. So I think that in general is just hard, you know, for the athlete to keep evolving as fast as they're fighting, you know. But as a matchup-wise, I think that Amanda is a way better matchup for me than, like, my last fight, for example.
You mentioned your last fight. There were sky-high expectations for you in that fight. It was a very tough fight for you. I don't know how it was a split decision. I thought you won clearly two of the rounds. But have you gone back and watched it and seen things that you know you can improve for this fight?
Yes, for sure. You know, like, I definitely went back, I watched, you know, like, a lot of things. You know, even, like, if I win by submission in the first 30 seconds, you know, I will be able to find something that I need to get better at. You know, I'm very, like, I very hard on myself. You know, I'm trying to always, like, get things as best as possible, you know. So, for sure, my coaches, like, we looked at the fights and took, of course, it's a completely different fighter, you know, so a lot of things is different, but more, like, my certain techniques that I do and things like that, I was able to see and everything like that, and we're working on that for the next fight, for my next upcoming fight.
So in a recent interview, Amanda said she's been watching you for years, but she said she thinks your striking is bad. Do you take that kind of thing personally?
No, I don't think so, you know. I mean, I'm a jiu-jitsu girl, you know, like, coming into the MMA world, you know. So I for sure, if, like, I take more personally when she talks bad about my jiu-jitsu game than my stand-up game, you know, because, you know, like, my jiu-jitsu is what I've done my whole life, you know. So if there's any, it's one thing, like, to talk about stand-up and, you know, that I understand people are going to criticize no matter what. And, you know, I mean, she's a fighter. She has to be confident, you know, like, to fight me, you know. If she doesn't show confidence, then that's going to be even better for me, you know. So I don't take personally, you know. I think every fight, it's a different person, you know, like, different style, or they talk more, or they talk less, you know. So I'm definitely, like, it's the first time I'm finding someone who's, from what I've seen, you know, I know that she's kind of talking a lot more, you know, than the past people I've fought. So it's a little different for me, but, man, I think that she should be way more nervous. She's the one who's going to go to Brazil and everything, you know, like, she, like, I think it's going to be way harder for her than for me, you know. So I'm just, like, you know, focusing on me and excited to get the fight going, and I think it's going to be a great fight.
Yeah, I looked at all of these interviews where she was saying all of these negative things about you, and I thought it was very interesting because, like you said, she's going into your, like, enemy territory, so to speak. What are some things that she can improve about her game? You know, from watching her fight, where do you think that you can capitalize on her game the most?
You know, I think just submission defense, you know, all her losses have been by submission. You know, I know that she has, like, some good, like, wrestling takedowns, you know, but, you know, I'm not a wrestler. So, like, I think, like, the ways that I'll go to the ground and stuff like that will be different than maybe what she's used to, like, perfect, like, you know, if you train with a high school wrestler that just is, like, you know, have perfect technique. I think my takedowns are going to be, like, a little bit different, you know. So I think, you know, the most important is for her to train her submission defense, and I think that's what's going to, like, going to hopefully help her if she wants to get through all the rounds, you know, because for sure I'm going in this fight, like, to try to submit as soon as possible.
You train in Arizona. You were recently at the UFC's card in Glendale with your teammate Sean O'Malley. You know, this thing a little bit fun on camera. I was doing his best impression of Nate Diaz, and you were cracking up next to him. What did you think of Sean's display? Sean is a real character. He's really picking up. His shirts were actually sold out. They released shirts for him on April 20th. I guess kind of cool tie-dye shirts, and they were flying off the shelves. So what's it like to see his kind of emergence as a budding star in the UFC? And when you saw what he was doing on camera, I guess you couldn't help yourself from laughing.
Yeah, you know, Sean, he's such a character, you know, like you said, he's a great kid, you know, and like we trained together before and all this stuff like that. So seeing him in his personality, he's such a cool person, and I'm so happy. I just wish, like, all the success for him. It was so cool, like, to have my debut on the same card as him. I was happy with his win, and, you know, like, you know, I know his personality, so I know how he is with weed and everything. And he, like, had showed it to me before. He said, oh, I'm going to do, like, you know, the brother, the Diaz brother did. And I said, like, and I saw, like, kind of laughing. And then when they put the camera and he did it, you know, I feel like, oh, my gosh, you know, like, my parents probably watching and everything. Like, I just laugh, you know. It's funny, you know, like, totally him, his style. And he's so cool, you know. So, like, he gave me a heads up he would do it. But when he really did it, was kind of like, oh, man, like, this is, like, on TV and everything. So it was fun.
Were you were worried about getting in trouble first and foremost?
not in trouble, you know, but just, you know, for my, you know, just, like, it's not my personality, you know. Like, I can't, like, the trash talk, you know. I'm not a trash talker, you know. So if I try to trash talk, I think people will laugh, you know. So the same thing, if they see me, like, you know, with a weed, you know, in my hand, they're going to, like, laugh, like, man, look at this girl. She doesn't even look like she smokes weed or anything, you know.
Well, you recently turned 25 years old. It's been great watching your evolution in mixed martial arts. It's your second UFC fight. It's coming up at UFC 224 in Brazil. You know, you've got many relatives that are going to be there in attendance, and it's going to be a great night overall, and we appreciate your time on the TSN MMA show.
Yes, thank you so much for having me. It's always great to talk with you guys. Thank you so much.
That was Mackenzie Dern, her second fight in the UFC, coming up this weekend against Amanda Cooper at UFC 224. She thinks it's a more favorable opponent than her first one. She fought just a couple months ago at UFC 222 against Ashley Yoder. So, I tend to agree with her. I think if you look at Cooper's record, the three submission losses is pretty telling. But let's get to our picks. We've right now, as I mentioned, Joe is at $96.75 after picking David Branch, who won in dominant fashion over Thiago Santos.
It was close too. I got a little nervous in the beginning until he caught that shot.
Santos is dangerous.
That's tough, man.
He's a dangerous guy. And I had Jim
Big,
Miller.
Strong, tough.
Jim Miller got destroyed. So now I'm at $92. You're up.
Yeah, that was a big knee too.
Yeah. Oh, Dan Hooker looked good.
Dan Hooker looked awesome, man.
So do you want to go ahead or do you want me to go first?
You go for
well,
it.
I mentioned earlier, I think Alexei Olenek has a lot of ways that he can win this fight against Junior Albini. I wasn't super impressed with Albini after seeing what Andrei Arlovsky did to him. A lot of people thought Albini was going to win that fight. Alexei Olenek just has a lot of tools at heavyweight. And I think that when you look at a guy who's kind of green like Albini and another guy that has a lot of experience like Olenek, I think Olenek has a good edge here. I said the same thing when he was fighting Blades, I know, but he was a much bigger underdog against Blades. And it was one of those ones where I just thought he could do something tricky. Ended up not being the case. But I think against Albini, he'll just have a better shot. So I'm going to go with Alexei Olenek at plus 125.
And just going to do one fight or parlay in it?
Just one.
All right. Let's go.
I could parlay with Dern, but I'm not going to. I'm pretty confident in Dern, but yeah. I didn't. I was nervous watching Dern in her last fight.
Yeah, I agree. But I'm gonna go with. I'm gonna go two fight parlay. I like Talis Latis, to be honest with you. I think he's got a lot of good options with the experience. He is against that Hermansens, who's, you know, good power KO ratio. But I'm gonna go with Talis and parlayed with John Lineker.
You're going for a kill shot with me. You're taking an underdog and parlaying him with a favorite.
Yep. I got to go for it.
Let's do some math here. So we got Lineker.
And we should remember this too.
Yeah, we should try. We should do our best.
We should try to remember it.
You've taken blows to the head and I haven't, so I should really be responsible for it.
This is all you.
So you said you said Lineker. I've already forgotten. Lineker and Latis. So that'll net you plus 226 if it comes through.
Done.
So that's Joe's pick. So I've got Alexei Olenek to recap, and Joe has a parlay of Talis Latis parlayed with John Lineker. So we'll see how that goes. So next week we'll do a recap of this show, and we've got a lot of cards coming up in the next couple weeks. We got the Chile card, and then that nice Liverpool card that I'm excited about.
Yeah, it's gonna be
fun.
And
then followed right after that is UFC 225. I'll be in Chicago for that.
Yeah, it's gonna be good. I mean, we haven't had those fights, and now after this card, I know there's not too much excitement, but it's picking up again. So
yeah, business is picking
ready.
Up. The UFC
That's
is back.
It. We're
now,
getting ready.
I would have liked for this card to be a little bit more stacked just because I liked that before 223, that was a really stacked card. And, you know, our appetites were really satiated for that card. And even though it ended up kind of falling apart at the end due to Conor throwing a dolly through a bus. But you can't foresee these things in MMA.
But it made it exciting for everyone. But I'm just wondering, too, now, what's happening with Chiesa? I know he's got a fight coming up. Is he getting any money for missing?
I think everybody who got taken off that card as a result of what happened got their show money. Okay. So
lawyers or law things that you've heard about?
Not that
or?
I've heard of. He might take Conor to court. I don't know. But he's going to be fighting Anthony Pettis at UFC 226. That'll be cool.
Yeah. I like it.
And we also have had the thing with Ray Borg. He got rescheduled for the Chile card, but has been pulled off. And as I mentioned on last week's show, you know, prayers are with Ray Borg and his family. It looks like his son is doing well now, which is great. His son had to get brain surgery twice. Oh. His newborn son, yeah.
Did they know what is it?
Yeah,
what?
It's there was some sort of some sort of issue with his brain. So,
oh, man.
But he had to get brain surgery, and then they had to something didn't take, and they had to do it again. Yeah. But they were in the hospital, and it seems like he's doing okay. So
good.
Let's, you know, continue to keep Ray Borg in your thoughts.
Definitely.
He was pulled from the Chile fight, and
he was pulled, or he removed himself.
Well, yeah, he wasn't pulled. Yeah, yeah. That's probably he had to withdraw. Yeah. So he was supposed to fight. Who did he get rescheduled against? Actually, I'm going to look that up now because I'm forgetting who he was. Oh, it was Moreno. They rescheduled him against Moreno, and now Moreno is going to be fighting Alexandre Pantoja, who was on the Ultimate Fighter show with him. So that should be interesting. I think Pantoja beat him, if I recall,
in the show,
in the first round of that show, and then Moreno just went on a tear.
Yeah.
So right. I'm going to look that up. So he beat he was the number one pick, Pantoja. Moreno was the number 16th pick. He was the last pick on the show, I believe. And then they had a really close fight. But now we've got two like new versions of these guys, and it's going to be interesting to see what happens there. For now, we're going to take off. We'll be back next week to recap UFC 224 and look ahead to this UFC Chile card, which is headlined by Demian Maia and Kamaru Usman. That's a fun one.
Yeah, it's going to be good.
Yep.
We'll see what Usman's all about, see if he can do it.
Thanks for listening to the TSN MMA show. For all the latest UFC news, visit tsn.ca/UFC.